Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
And then the moment where you do recognize that, you know, you either laughed because somebody said something funny, or you actually weren't thinking about, you know, your son being missing for a few minutes. As soon as you recognize that, the guilt that hits you, it's like, oh my God. So you really get torn when you know you have responsibilities that feel so wrong, even if you have a moment or two of peace.
On January 22, 2018, 24-year-old Jacob Hilken went to visit his mom. He planned to spend the evening with her and use the internet at her place since his wasn't working. Later that evening, a couple friends picked him up to go to a casino in Tulalip, Washington. After spending several hours at the casino, Jake walked away stating that he was going to take a bus back home. The last sighting of him was at 10:20 in the morning on the 23rd when the police were doing a homeless sweep of the area. They checked his ID and he told them that he was trying to catch a bus back home. After that, Jake disappeared without a trace. There have been numerous sightings of him since this time, but they've all either been ruled out or remain unconfirmed. What happened to Jacob Hilken on January 23rd, 2018? I'm Marissa, and this is episode 117 of The Vanished, Jacob Hilken's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I was contacted by Jake's mom, Marnie, back in January, right after he went missing. She immediately knew something was wrong when her son disappeared. It wasn't like Jake to just walk away. Marnie has a very close relationship with him, and they got through tough times together. She knew that if there was some kind of trouble, he would have come to her for help. Now, almost 2 months later, the answer to what happened to Jake remains a mystery. One thing that I want to mention up front that we will go into more detail about later is that Jake had struggled with heroin addiction, but had been clean for about a year after going through a rehab program. This is a potentially important aspect of his story that I want you to keep in mind while listening. When I spoke to Marnie, she gave me some background information about Jake and the time leading up to his disappearance.
He lived on his own. He had his own house with a bunch of buddies. And on Monday the 22nd, he had texted me during the day asking if he could come over. He had lost his job the week before. So he's like, we don't have internet. I was thinking about coming over, hanging out with you tonight and spending the night. That way I can, you know, use my laptop and get online to look for jobs. I'm like, you bet, hun. So the fact that he was with me, he came over, great spirits. We had such a good conversation together. And then around 9 o'clock at night, he asked me how much longer I was staying up because he had brought his Xbox with him to play. And, you know, the only TV downstairs is where he would have been playing on it. And I said, oh, hon, mom's going to bed. So you can play Xbox. And he gave me a hug and kiss and said, I love you. I went to bed. And then around midnight, his friends came and got him and they went out. And it just feels so unreal. And anybody who knows my son all says, Jake would never do this, especially to you. Like, one thing that all his friends say is, Jake's mom is his life. You know, the last 2 years have been hell with so many other things that have happened, that Jake was my strength, and that he wouldn't do this intentionally, which just makes me so fearful that somebody has hurt him.
Late in the evening on the 22nd, Jake left his mom's house with his friends. When his friends picked him up, he left his stuff behind like he was planning on coming back. Marnie told me what she's been able to gather regarding what happened after he left with his friends.
The one friend that Jake was with, his name is Deshaun, they're pretty good friends. So Deshaun came to the house to pick up Jake. The person who was driving, his name is Robbie. And this kid is not cooperating at all with anyone. So they came to pick up Jake here at the house. And we've even verified that through Facebook Messenger, because we were able to get into Jake's account and, you know, see that their plans for the night were, yeah, I'm going to come by and pick you up. So they picked him up. They went up to the casino. So by the time they get up there, it's probably close to like 1 something in the morning. And my son didn't have money to spend at the casino. As a matter of fact, when he left here, he left his Xbox plugged in, his phone charger plugged in, his blankets in his backpack that he had for spending the night here. He had brought his music equipment with him, like a lot of items that you think if you're just coming to spend the night at your mom's for one night, you wouldn't normally bring. He left like $90 in cash sitting on the counter. And, you know, they went up to the casino. Deshaun and Jake really didn't have any money. And this Robbie character, he was in the casino. They all played for a couple of hours. And then supposedly Jake told Robbie, yeah, I don't have money, you know, to gamble. And that this Robbie gave him like $130. Well, the story is that Jake lost that money at the casino. And by then their cell phones were just about dead. They had no money to, you know, buy anything or even gamble with. So Deshaun and him went out into the parking lot. Now, that still doesn't quite make sense, and I don't know why they went out into the parking lot. There's probably more to the story, but I have a few pieces of it from Deshaun's side. But this Robbie kid who had the car would not come out of the casino. He continued to gamble and gamble, and throughout the night lost like $1,500. So Jake and Deshaun were out in the parking lot, and Deshaun tells me, you know, they were hanging out in the car. They're just, you know, talking and using Snapchat. Then they decided to go wandering around in the parking lot. Now, you know, I know that Deshaun is probably not telling me the whole truth because he doesn't want me to think anything bad of my son. But he told me that Jake walked up to a car and opened the car door, and there was somebody in the car, and the guy punched my son. And Deshaun says, you know, the car looked just like the car that we were, Robbie's car, so maybe Jake just opened it by mistake. I don't know. You know, again, as much as I love my son, I would think that they're probably up to no good, whether they were trying to see if somebody had something left in their car or what they were doing. I don't completely know, but apparently after Jake got punched, he walked over to the other car where Deshaun still was and says, hey, dude, I just got punched in the face by this guy. So Deshaun goes with Jake back over to that car to confront that guy. And the guy gets scared and starts laying on the horn. At that time, security comes into the parking lot and Jake and Deshaun take off. Supposedly, a couple of hours go by. So Jake and Deshaun go sit in the back in the Robbie's car, just waiting for Robbie to come out. And then security sees them and says, you guys match the ID of somebody who was walking around trying to get into cars. You need to leave. And I'm told this time it's like somewhere between 7 and 9 in the morning. The story changes slightly when you talk to Deshaun about the actual time. So when the security guard says, you guys need to leave, this is now January 23rd, early in the morning, like between 7 and 9 a.m. Jake grabs his stuff and walks off. And Deshaun's saying, Jake, where are you going to go? You don't have any money. You don't have your cell phone. And he's like, I'm going to go find a bus and get home to my mom. I'm going to my mom's house. They had asked the security guard, supposedly, if they could go inside, get their friend. He said no. They said, can we use a phone? Where our phones are dead. And they said no to that as well and told him, go to Walmart down the street. You can charge your phone there. So when Jake walked off in one direction, Deshaun said he walked off in the other direction because what he wanted to do is just wait for the security guard to leave, and then he was just going to go sit right back in the car again because he had no money, no coat, no cell phone either. And so he says that's what he did. Jake walks off one direction, going to find the bus stop, and Deshaun walks off to the parking lot. As soon as the security guard goes away, he goes back into the car. He says it's another couple of hours before three sheriffs knock on the door and telling them he must leave. That's when they got this Robbie guy out of the casino. And supposedly, Robbie and Deshaun leave, thinking it's been hours since now Jake's probably home. That's kind of that whole scenario in the parking lot.
As I mentioned, Jake did come in contact with the police on the morning of the 23rd.
We do know that Jake didn't walk and stay at the bus stop for very long. If he did go there, he went behind the casino. There's all these wooded areas and paths. I mean, it's a beautiful rural country, but it's full of woods. And unfortunately, there's a lot of homeless kids, a lot of encampments. And, you know, and unfortunately, Washington State is known for its, you know, heroin epidemic. And it's really alive and strong in that area. Apparently, Jake walks behind those trails in that wooded area, and that's where he's contacted by the Tulalip police, that they come and do a homeless sweep, ID everybody. They said that Jake looked fine. He said he was fine. He was just trying to find the bus to head back to his mom's, and that the police pointed him in that direction and that he walked off. And that's the last true sighting at 10:20 in the morning on January 23rd. That anyone has true contact that we could verify.
While Marnie was explaining this all to me, I started to wonder if Jake had a bus pass. We know he didn't have any money, so how would he have taken a bus? She told me that he didn't have a bus pass, but that it still would have been easy for him to catch a bus.
The way that the buses work up here is it's like an automated thing that you pay. So really the bus drivers no longer take money, accept money or anything like that. They just stop at the bus stop, people get on, and then they have different people either on the bus or at stops that verify when you get off if you have paid, and if not, you get like a $135 fine. So it's pretty easy for somebody who doesn't have money to be able to use the bus and take the chance of, you know, not getting caught.
So from what his friends have said, Jake was basically stranded. It's quite possible that he would have risked getting a relatively small fine just to get back home. It's something that could have just been taken care of later.
Absolutely. And Jake always knew. I mean, he came to me numerous times for help with things. And that's the kind of relationship that he had with me. You know, he would know I would help him through anything. You know, and my son does not like to be cold. He is not an outdoor type kid. You know, that doesn't appeal to him. To be hanging out with homeless people in the woods, well, I think that unfortunately, if he is relapsed, that he would do that to, you know, to get heroin. He would then just want to get home. You know, he was at the 1 year mark of the time that he had gone into rehab, and he had done so well. He was just so clear-minded. He got, you know, a job, he got a car. He moved out with his friends, and to see all of this unravel is just so unnerving.
Marnie has been going out and searching for Jake, and she spoke to a woman who had interacted with him prior to the homeless sweep.
On our search that following Saturday, one of the searchers ran into a girl who says, yeah, he was here with us just before the homeless sweep. He was by himself. He said his friends left him stranded, that his car is in Mukilteo, and that he was trying to find the bus and a BECU bank to go get a new card. She's like, he was here with us for about 30 minutes. You know, we gave him a cigarette. We gave him something to eat, but he was looking for brown. And I didn't know that that's a reference for heroin. But when we asked again, she's like, heroin. And I have the video of her. She agreed to be put on video to say what she saw and what, happened. So that was just before the homeless sweep. So we do know that he was with somebody. We know that he encountered a homeless young couple, that he was looking for heroin, and that he said he just saw a path and started walking back here, but he was trying to get to a bus. You know, it doesn't make sense. His bank accounts have not been touched. He's not even tried to access and get a new card, nothing.
The detail about him mentioning a specific bank is interesting to me. He said that he needed to go get a new card made. That does give a potential direction that Jake could have headed after the homeless sweep. Unfortunately, there's no evidence that he ever made it to the bank.
He could have walked to it, and so that's why we've checked with all the banks and also that specific bank. We've put up posters everywhere, but they, in their system, it would show even if somebody tried to access his account, like if he came in and didn't have ID, they would make some kind of note, probably, is what I've been told. And there's nothing in there. I put money in both of his bank accounts a week after he went missing just to see if maybe that would somehow, he would find out and then that would mean he would go and try and get money and at least I would know he's okay. But there's been nothing, no activity.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. One thing that could be useful would be to gather surveillance footage from the many businesses in the area. Since Jake was on foot, you'd think that he'd show up on a camera somewhere. That could potentially help focus the search, but Marnie has had some trouble with this.
So I have been trying, and it is like pulling teeth to get anybody to pull surveillance. Now, even if the police put in, and I've asked, I have permission from the mall. They said, yes, have your detective call us. We'll pull footage. The Walmart that is right there, they said that if the request came that they would, try to process it and get that in. The only true footage that was pulled was the bus stop area right around 10 o'clock in the morning where Jacob supposedly, you know, was headed towards a bus. And there's no footage showing he ever got on the bus. But every request that I make, it leads to a dead end. Nobody will pull the footage or send it to him.
There have been many sightings of Jake since he went missing, but sightings are often difficult to track down.
There's been several sightings, but the problem is nothing that's been able to be verified. The one that felt really, really positive was 2 weeks after Jake went missing, and we were out doing a search and putting posters up everywhere, and this lady stopped one of our searchers and said, "I saw him. I called 911. 911 never responded. I tried to stop him. I didn't take a photo, but I'll tell you right where it was, and you can pull the footage at Fred Meyer's." I contacted her that same day. I met her at the Fred Meyer's. She walked me through the whole scenario, where she saw him, the fact that, you know, he looked like he was a little out of it, but she was 100% sure it was him. Well, I gave this information to the detective. A week goes by and nothing. I follow up and they're like, "We're still waiting on the footage." At that point, I just got pissed. So I called Fred Meyer's, and in 45 minutes, I had a video ready to be picked up by the police. So I don't understand what this delay is when you have law enforcement involved. But if a mother can make one phone call and in 45 minutes get a tape ready for viewing, it just seems like there's a disconnect somewhere. Maybe I, you know, struck an emotional chord with the manager, and that's why he acted so fast for me. So then when we saw the footage, I looked and determined it was not my son, but it was somebody who looks so close to him that I absolutely understand why people would think it's him. Since that time, there's a kid in the Marysville area that says he's been stopped so many times by people asking if he's Jake. So I know that there is somebody else out there that happens to look very close to him. But the other sightings are people will just say, "Oh, I think I see him walking down the street." Or they'll send me another video and I'm like, "That's not him."
Remember the homeless couple who said that they spoke to Jake before the homeless sweep? The man has claimed that he saw Jake after he disappeared.
You know, only one person who claims to be the boyfriend of that Lillian gal who did the video to say, yeah, he came back in the woods and we gave him, you know, cigarettes and something to eat. He said he was with Jake a day or so later at this place called Crack Alley, and Jake had his lanyard around his neck and a beer, you know, in his pocket. And, you know, as unflattering as that is, Jake had a lanyard, and that wasn't listed anywhere in any of the posts. And it's tied to this Lillian girl. So I have the PI talking with them more today because I want to know more about that. If they truly did see him, then I want to know what his mindset was. Did he give any indication of where he was going to go?
When Marnie told me about Crack Alley, I automatically envisioned an actual alley. But she explained to me what this area is like and where it is in relation to the casino.
Oh, yeah, it's literally right behind the casino. There's a road that runs parallel to I-5, the freeway. And in between that road and I-5 is the casino. All around it are wooded areas. The back roads, which would just be the back roads to the casino, there are abandoned houses. There's trailers everywhere. And I don't mean like, you know, a normal kind of trailer. I mean, run down, scary things where you think there is no way somebody is living in those. And then you will see people come in and out of them. The place called Crack Alley is actually an encampment in the woods, and we've been back there several times. And people will look at a flyer and say, "Oh, yeah, I think I saw him." But these are people who are so out of it, they couldn't even tell if, you know, which way is up. And I think some of them see a flyer, and then the next day it looks familiar to them. Well, it's because they looked at the flyer the day before. And it's, you know, it's beautiful where we live. You know, people have this, you know, false idea that first they think, well, that kind of drug activity only happens in the urban city. Well, it's actually worse out in the country than it is in the city. And our homeless youth population and homeless population overall it's crazy. And there's encampments everywhere, whether you're in the city or under bridges or out in the country in wooded areas. It's crazy. And, you know, when you're just walking by, you don't see it, but you go take steps 15, 20 feet into the woods and all of a sudden you see their little camps. And that's why I feel like the police are just numb to it. For them, it's an everyday occurrence.
One sighting that they're currently looking into came from a bus driver who believes they saw Jake 2 weeks after he disappeared.
A bus driver who claims on February 6th that he saw Jake on the bus. He sent me a message. He said he called it into the sheriff as a tip to say, here's the bus, here's the time, here's the location. This has been since February 6th that I am following up with the police and saying, where is that footage? Where is that footage? And they keep saying, we haven't received it yet. And that's just bull. I mean, it just infuriates me.
The bus driver believes that they saw Jake on a bus many miles from where he went missing, but still close enough that it gives them hope that it could be him.
It would have been about 15 miles south of Tulalip, of the casino area. So he would have literally had to go past my house, you know, or that area. The only thing of proving if that was Jake, then we would know, okay, he is for some reason on a bender and out there on his own and just doesn't want to come home. But I can't even get the footage to prove that. Highway 99 also runs north and south, just like I-5 does. And that's the bus line that this person saw him on. And again, since it's the bus driver and he could identify the either number one or number two passenger between 4 p.m. and 4:06 on February 6th, here's the bus route, here's the stop, here's the footage you need to pull. I mean, that's like handing it to the police on a silver platter and it's not getting anywhere.
With so many sightings not panning out, I wondered what made the bus driver think it was Jake.
They just said the description and the glasses and just looked exactly like the flyers that they have. The community transit has the flyers in their employee break room. So the driver had seen the flyers beforehand, but you know, he's a good looking kid, but he doesn't have any distinguishing features. Like he doesn't have like a large nose or big noticeable scar. He has a small scar on his above his eye, but brown hair and medium complexion and brown eyes. And there's nothing that really is too distinguishing besides the fact that, you know, his glasses, and people focus on that a lot.
Marnie told me that the casino is about 10 miles away from her home. That's a pretty far walk, but definitely doable for a 24-year-old guy. It would just take a few hours. Is it possible that Jake decided to walk back and something happened to him along the way?
We thought that too. And so one of our searches that we did, we had people actually go walk that path, you know, walk the back roads. It would be so obvious if he was on the, it's right off the freeway. So he wouldn't use the freeway if he didn't want to get picked up by the police, but there's plenty of back roads. And all the back roads are, again, wooded areas, big fields. It's very country out there. And then, you know, smaller cities around like Everett and Snohomish. And
family, friends, and volunteers have been continuing to search on the ground for Jake. They've visited many homeless camps, traveled to nearby cities and towns, hoping that someone would recognize him.
I mean, we've done searches almost every single weekend with community efforts and asking people to help us. And then, you know, every waking hour between me and his dad, who lives in Seattle, you know, he's out looking all the time and going to homeless shelters, going to, you know, blood banks, going to, you know, we're calling hospitals. The only one thing we've been able to verify is, you know, the coroner's office said they don't have anybody that's unidentified. So as morbid as that sounds, I wanted to rule out absolutely everything. And so that's why we hired a private investigator a week ago to help us to see if there was any other traction that could be made. I have seen more needles than probably most people in their lifetime after searching all these wooded areas. And I mean, going into encampments and asking people who are sitting in the tent, giving them flyers, going to abandoned houses. You know, we've done very safe things and we've done quite a few probably very unsafe things as well. And it just is unreal. I mean, we've covered so many cities that I just don't understand if he was truly out there and trying to just lay low, I don't see how he could. There's so many people that are out there looking for him.
Think about being in a situation where you're stranded miles away from home. Some people would never ask a stranger for a ride, while others feel totally comfortable doing just that.
He would take a chance every time. Yeah, that's Jake. He trusted people and really just, yeah, he would think that he was not in danger. He would take a ride in a heartbeat.
Marnie told me about a scary tip they received.
There was a call that came in the middle of the night, and I didn't get the message. So when the searcher who was trying to reach me couldn't reach me, they reached out to another person who's been helping me search for Jake. And it came like on a Wednesday night. I'm going to say it was a week and a half ago now. Michael Furnell, who got the phone call from this person, said, "Look, Marnie, we just got a lead. I don't know how credible it is, but they won't talk to anybody on the phone and they won't meet police. They'll only meet in person. They wanted to meet with you, but I'm going up instead." So he goes up to the casino and meets this guy named Adam. And this Adam tells him quite a few stories. Michael called me back after and said, "Yeah, I just don't know how credible it is, but I want you to know I put the lead in to the sheriff and to Detective Bilyeu, who's on your case. So I just wanted to let you know that." Well, Michael was a little bit vague, and I completely understand now why. Because a couple of days later, I opened my email and Detective Bilyeu says, "I wanted to let you know about this lead that came from Michael Furnell after he met this Adam kid up at the casino. They claim that there's a kid named Jared who was behind the old municipal building in Marysville and saw a body wrapped in plastic, and it matches your son's description. We have sent homicide out there and found this lead to not be credible." So, you know, I called Michael and I'm like, "Michael, why didn't you tell me this?" And he said, "Marnie, I was not going to put you through that when we didn't even know if this was a credible lead." He's like, "I'm sorry. I hope I did the right thing. I didn't want to upset you and knew that the detectives were going to be out there and searching to make sure." And he's like, "I hope you're not upset with me." And I said, "No, I understand." Then we find out there's two municipal buildings in Marysville. There's a new one and an old one. And so I asked the detective, I'm like, "Which one was searched?" And they had searched the new building, not the old municipal building, which is abandoned. So I went up to the old building with one of my friends, and her and I searched the area. I mean, we're finding piles of rubble and digging through it to make sure that there isn't a body there. We're doing everything possible. And it's so unnerving. I mean, we found nothing, of course. But, you know, when I followed up with the detective and said, "Well, you know, which building did you search?" And I clarified why I had said that. Apparently, they were going to send somebody out to the other building, too. But I've never heard back.
We know that phone data can be crucial in missing persons cases. Jake's phone wasn't used after the morning that he disappeared. But recently, they have a new mystery regarding his phone.
So it's pretty interesting. You know, when I woke up January 23rd in the morning, I went downstairs and both my front door were unlocked. My back sliding door was unlocked and Jacob wasn't there. And immediately I was like, "Damn it, Jake, you can't leave and then leave the house open like this. That's not safe for me." And then I start thinking, well, maybe he's up in one of the rooms. I search all the rooms. He's not there. I look outside and his car's here, which is strange because he always drove his car. And so I called him immediately. It went straight to, you know, the wireless person you're trying to reach cannot be reached. I Facebook message him. I text him. None of that has gone through. We're on the same cell phone plan together. So I could see that activity stopped at like 4 something in that morning. So no more data use, no outgoing text messages, calls, nothing. Nothing has changed on that phone. No use of it up until a week ago. Jake's dad, he just calls the phone every day because it's something he feels like he needs to do. And all of a sudden, the message changed to, "The person you're trying to reach has a mailbox that has not been set up," which Jake never set up his mailbox. And that is what it used to say all the time when we called him before. So it's proof that that phone was powered on But I'm trying to work with AT&T, and while they're somewhat helpful, I need to place another call to them again today. They haven't been able to tell me. They just say, well, something changed on the phone, but they can't tell me what. And so I got with another friend who understands technology much more than I do, and they've told me I need to call back again with technical support and say, you should be able to verify with the ID number of the phone. That and the SIM card are still matching up with Jacob's phone number, because it's possible that somebody took the SIM card out, put their SIM card in. They could go look online and do a factory reset of the phone, and now they have a phone that they can use. They won't ping it for me. Even though it's my phone, my plan, and my son is on it with me, they cannot ping the phone without police requesting it. Well, the police say they cannot do it because the state law prohibits it unless it's certain criteria is met, and that we meet none of that since Jake is an adult and adults have the right to disappear. So unless they can prove that somebody has hurt him already or that he's been kidnapped or something like that, they won't even put the request in with the judge to have the papers submitted to AT&T for the pinging of the phone.
They've even tried to get the location information from his phone using Jake's Google account.
One of his friends, because Jake's laptop was here, one of his friends knows the password. So he came over one night, and you can, through Google, if you know the email account that the phone was set up with and his password, you can, sort of like you would do if you had an iPhone, of Find My Phone. Well, there's another one for an Android device. And he tried it. It started about a week and a half ago where he's tried to do it, and it will not reach the phone. And AT&T can't tell me why that would be. It's so frustrating when you feel like you don't quite have the tech knowledge to be able to speak the same language to the, you know, AT&T representatives. And I know that they're trying to help, but it just doesn't seem like they're able to do. I just don't understand why somebody can't just ping the phone. It's so frustrating.
One thing that I keep going back to is why this one friend isn't being cooperative. I hear this so often from families, and you always have to wonder if the person knows more, or if they just don't want to be involved in an investigation for their own reasons. There were two friends with Jake at the casino, and one has been cooperative. He states that they left without Jake. If that's true, why is the other friend being so evasive? Marnie told me the feeling that she's gotten about this.
Well, I think because he's a bit of a punk, and I think that he does a lot of things and gets in a lot of trouble. I asked Deshaun, I said, why won't this Robbie kid talk to the detective? And the detective tried to contact him and was told that he moved to Hawaii. Well, that sounds pretty suspicious. He won't contact anybody. He won't cooperate. And he then takes off to Hawaii. And Deshaun said, his parents live in Hawaii. His parents flew him out there. He's coming back. He's got two court dates because he keeps getting DUIs and hit and runs and getting into other trouble. And I think he also is dealing, or he's definitely using, but I think he might have been dealing and involved in fentanyl, which I'm sure that you're probably hearing more and more about, which is a much deadlier drug than even heroin. And the stories we hear about this kid, you know, Deshaun's known this Robbie guy since he's in fourth grade. He's like, I swear he didn't do anything. None of us know anything about what happened to Jake, and I'll help you every step I can take. But Robbie's just kind of a weird one. He already knows he's in trouble. So, and he had only just met Jake, you know, a little while earlier. So he's not really connected to him.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
You aren't sleeping and you're stressed out. That's how it was for me, so I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. Their deep sleep gummies are amazing. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made from the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In two non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm, 80% said CBD helped with pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is a source to trust. I have a 20% discount to get you started. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code VANISHED for 20% off. That's cbdistillery.com, code VANISHED. cbdistillery.com. Jake's friend mentioned that he had been punched in the face by a man in the parking lot that morning. Is it possible that he could have been disoriented by that?
Yeah, I asked about that too. I said, Deshaun, like, was Jake bleeding? He goes, no. And you know, Jake, he just calmly walked up to me and goes, dude, I got punched in the face, which I can totally hear my son saying that, just kind of without a whole lot of reaction. But Deshaun said there was no swelling anywhere. There was no red mark. There was no blood. He acted just fine. And that he was with Jacob for a good couple of hours after that, or at least, you know, an hour and a half after that. Because one of the other sightings was that they saw a kid outside of the Big Lots area and he had blood running down his head and they're pretty sure it was Jake. You know, we went to follow that lead. Well, there was no cameras at the Big Lots. This person has gone back several times trying to find him again and then has not been seen. Other sightings are him walking around that same similar area and saying, oh no, he looked just fine. So it's just so hard to know if somebody's seen someone else, because I just cannot imagine my son doing this.
One theory is that Jake relapsed and is just hiding out somewhere because he doesn't want to face his family. I asked Marnie if she had seen any signs that he had been using leading up to his disappearance.
No, Jake had been coming over here and, you know, he'd eat when I made dinner. He wasn't fidgety. We, you know, hang out and talk and he seemed completely normal. He does smoke pot, so I could tell if he had smoked pot, but that wasn't, I mean, in Washington, it's legal, and it just, of all things, that didn't bother me. If he could stay sober and stay off of everything else and make good decisions, I wasn't judging him on that. It's just so hard because people, even if they don't judge you, when a person goes missing and it's connected with a drug addiction, they all make the assumption that this person is just doing this out of their own choice and not wanting to come home. And to me, those are the most vulnerable people to crimes. They're passed out, they're using, they can get robbed, they can get hurt. That's the part that was so hard to, you know, I finally updated the post with that level of information for people to see. And it's hard because when I created that post, it took off like wildfire and we had 85,000 shares. And I had close to 14,000 messages of people sending me messages. And I made it through every single one. And I thought, there's no way he can't come home after this. Everybody knows where he's at. I mean, there's posters everywhere. The social media aspect. I don't understand how somebody can just disappear.
Marnie believes that had Jake just gone on a bender, he would have found a way back to get his things. We know that he left cash behind at her house. What do you need to fuel an addiction? Money.
And let's say even later that day, he would have known that I was at work. So if he did make it back here and said, I'm going on a bender, forget this, he would have taken his stuff with him and then come back and got his cash. He would have taken all these electronics that he brought over and went and pawned them. I mean, that we've been to pawn shops, we've called mental hospitals, we've called regular hospitals.
Even though it's a possibility that Jake may have walked away, Marnie just doesn't believe that it's something her son would have done.
He wouldn't. Not under any circumstances, but especially after what he knows that I have been through in the last year and a half and how he and I stuck together. I mean, if you look at his Facebook page, one of the things that I posted early on was the inside of the last Mother's Day card that he gave me. And I did it for a couple of reasons. I wanted to certainly pull from emotional heartstrings for anybody who knew him that may be hiding something and not telling us, or if Jake had contacted them and could at least say, hey, I know he's okay. But I also wanted people to know what kind of son my child is. And if you read the inside of that card, you'll know, like, he would never do this.
When you think about that night at the casino, it sounds like a night that just didn't go as planned, and Jake ended up stuck miles away from home. Is that a situation that would cause someone to make the choice to just walk away from their life? From what they've been able to gather, it appears that he was planning on going back to Marnie's house that night after spending a couple hours with friends.
I mean, especially knowing that he had planned on coming back here. I mean, he was hanging out with me. He could have just stayed at his place. He didn't have to come over here, you know?
The Snohomish County Sheriff's Office has been involved in the search for Jake, but they've also been honest with his family about their own limitations.
Well, you know, they were honest with me. I sat down with them a week after Jake went missing with two homicide detectives, and they said, look, we want you to know, first of all, it's almost unheard of that you would be sitting down across from two homicide detectives over a missing person's case. But we have seen everything that you have done, and you're really making our job a lot easier to at least start somewhere. So there's only 8 detectives for all of Snohomish County, which is a huge county, and we're all on active homicide investigations right now. So we want you to know this is going to be something we can follow up with leads, but we're not going to be able to do much for you. So while they were honest with that, it is still frustrating because it's like until they can prove that my son is not okay, or that somebody has hurt him, then that's the only time they're going to do anything. It's me reaching out to them.
When someone goes missing and you know that the police have limited resources, the family is left trying to do everything they can to search on their own. They've hired a private investigator and continue to do their own searches. One thing that makes this all so difficult to juggle is that there's no pause button on the rest of your life when someone goes missing.
It's so overwhelming. You get so much information and people giving you suggestions, and most of them are great. And, you know, of course, I'm still working full time while I'm trying to find my son because it's just me and the kids. I don't have that choice of not working. And then the moment where you do recognize that, you know, you either laughed because somebody said something funny, or you actually weren't thinking about, you know, your son being missing for a few minutes. As soon as you recognize that, the guilt that hits you, it's like, oh my God. So you really get torn. Well, you know, you have responsibilities. It feels so wrong, even if you have a moment or two of peace.
Often with missing persons cases, we see people try to insert themselves into the case for one reason or another. One person who has done this in Jacob's case was a psychic who published a very upsetting video on YouTube.
The crazies come out when you have public posts like this. And, you know, this one psychic on the East Coast sent this video that's just horrible, that talks about he was buried alive. And it's on YouTube. And if you just type in my son's name, you'll see her. But I've had several people send me the video and I'm like, what are you trying to do to me? First of all, I do have a belief in psychics, but I think very few people actually have that gift. And I think that this person is just trying to get famous. And why on earth would you send me a video that is 29 minutes long talking about how she knows my son was murdered?
So what happened to Jacob Hilken on January 23rd, 2018, after he spoke to the police during the homeless sweep? It's always puzzling when you have someone who's being noticed by multiple people and then they're just gone. He was noticed in the casino parking lot, had interactions with homeless people, and even the police, but then he just vanished. I'm hoping that more surveillance videos can be reviewed, That could possibly help to identify what direction Jake went in after speaking to the police. Is it possible that Jake's out there and just doesn't want to come forward due to his drug use? Or did Jake become a victim of a crime or even an accident? He was talking about going to his bank to get a new card. Why didn't he ever make it there? There are so many possibilities in this case because there are no good clues pointing in one direction or another. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jacob Hilken, you can call the Snohomish County Sheriff's Office at 425-388-3845. If you'd like to contact his family, you can find them on Facebook under Find Jacob Hilken. There is currently a $5,000 reward available. Jacob is described as 5 foot 11 inches tall, weighing about 160 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. One identifying feature is that Jacob is always known to wear his glasses. That brings us to the end of episode 117. I'd like to thank Marnie for taking the time to speak with me. Again, if you'd like to follow Jake's case on Facebook, just search for Find Jacob Hilken. And I'll also include a link in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me, I'm on Facebook where there's a page and a discussion group. I'm on Twitter at The Vanished Pod and on Instagram as well. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Arizona. Thanks for listening.
I'm much more aware of it now because I'm dealing with it. But the amount of people who have gone missing from that area, it's unreal. And the circumstances are so eerily similar. A guy went missing a week or so after Jake. He was walking to around Tulalip because he was going to his doctor's appointment. He left his house, you know, all his belongings there, his pets there, and just absolutely has never been seen again and never made it to his doctor's appointment. And it's literally like in the same area. And that's just a week after. Just a couple of days ago, right in downtown Marysville, there was a murder. And it happened out very close to the casino. They knew that this guy had won money and, you know, ended up shooting him in the head and killing him and then took off. And so there's now two fugitives. They know who they are, but haven't captured them yet. Everybody wants to believe that he just walked away on his own. And as a mom, I want to believe that he's still okay. But there is just something so wrong about this. You know, I'm sitting here in my bedroom and his backpack is sitting here next to me and his blankets. And I keep wanting to put those on my bed and snuggle with him because they smell like him. But at the same time, I want to preserve that stuff in case anybody needs it, you know, it's for to prove it was Jake's. And it's just mentally a lot.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker
lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all six episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.